Now we're going to move on and we're going to talk crocodiles. And I'm delighted to welcome John Dunbar. He's been sitting patiently here in the studio. Welcome to the programme, John.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Now, you're a student, a second-year student at NUI Maynooth, but you're a guy who's in his early 30s, so you know, you're a little bit different to the other students, but we'll talk about that. But first of all, your interest in reptiles and crocodiles, does that go back a long way, would you?
It does. It goes back about 15 years. In a job I worked in, a guy came in to me one day and asked me if I wanted a snake that he no longer wanted. So I didn't know a thing about reptiles at the time, and I sure said took it on. And it was from reading up to learn about them. I was reading through an old encyclopedia, and I started reading about giant pythons that can swallow animals as big as deer, horns and all. And yeah. I just became completely fascinated. Like, it was something that I'd never seen on TV or heard about before.
Yeah.
And from then on, my mind was just kind of exploded with, you know, the idea of this happening, you know.
And they can actually eat something that large.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've seen them eat mice and stuff like that. But
no, there's various snakes around the world, anacondas in South America, and then a couple of species of giant pythons through Africa, Asia and Australia.
Yeah.
And they've been known to grow over 20 feet long, and they can eat animals, as, you know, as big as sheep.
Okay. Well, you're in Maynooth now. We'll just talk about yourself for a minute. You did the junior cert, but then after that, you kind of went off and did various jobs. So you weren't headed towards university at all.
No. And it was from this hobby and interest, because I started collecting snakes after that. And from talking to a biologist, Jesus Rivas, I got invited on an expedition he was doing in South America catching anacondas. And it was from that trip, myself and my wife went down, and we were catching, like, you know, I think we caught 36 anacondas.
How do you catch it? They're huge, aren't they?
Yeah, some of them were very big. Most of them were, you know, 6-7 feet long, but we caught about 3 or 4 of them that were around 4 meters long.
In a net?
No, you're walking along in your bare feet, and you're going through
in the water,
and you're looking to either see them or to feel them on your feet.
On your feet?
Yeah.
And you didn't feel any fear doing that? I'd be terrified, I think.
To me, it was more exciting than anything else, you know. I say the biggest fear was from the bugs biting, you know, but, like, you're not really in too much danger there at all.
So when you feel them on your feet, what do you do then? How do you get them?
Well, funny enough, I actually didn't stand on anything. The others were.
Yeah.
I was actually spotting mine first.
Okay.
So you just really kind of look for where the head is, and you try and grab them behind the head before they grab you.
Well, that's the kind of thing. Some people are probably listening now thinking, my God, I'd never do that. And others are thinking, I'd love to do that. So you either like it or you hate it, I'd say.
Yeah, well, my wife Teresa, when I first met her 9 years ago, she was absolutely petrified of the idea of a snake being within any distance of a snake. And I remember the first time I brought her into Reptile Haven in town, she was hysterical, the tears coming out of her eyes, and she was just terrified. And within, you know, showing her, like, what they're like when they're babies, and how such an innocent, you know, baby hatching out of an egg is just left to defend for itself in a jungle where most adult men wouldn't survive.
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of, you kind of look at it in a different way. It's cute, and it's defenses, and it kind of, you know, caught her interest in, and she started to see a different side to them, you know.
Yeah, because it's very easy for a lot of people to get into mammals, you know, things that are small, little furry creatures, because they're a bit like teddy bears or, you know, things like that. But I think a lot of people, when they think of a snake or a reptile or a crocodile, they're thinking of something nearly like a dinosaur, you know, that's fearful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been around, you know, like 100 million years, you know, more, and it's they're very primitive, but it seems they're more primitive than what we see, because we just see, you know, an animal that doesn't think, it doesn't do anything, but that's not really true.
Because I'm guessing here now, but I think a lot of people might be like me, and you'd have an image of a crocodile as a killing machine, that it's not really thinking, or it's just moving around.
Well, it is a killing machine, and when I say a killing machine, it's for, you know, their food, like, it's what they're meant to do, you know, to survive. I mean, the biggest killing machine in the planet is humans, you know, we're so good at it. But crocodiles are so much more sensitive. I mean, David Attenborough documented in the late 60s, early 70s footage of a mother, you know, taking her babies in her mouth and bringing them down to the river.
Yeah.
Before that was aired, like, it was, you know, disregarded. Like, they said, there's no way they do that. They eat them, you know, people were convinced. And so it's after that then they started to see them in a different light.
Sure. So after this experience then in South America, where you had this brilliant you know, interaction with all these creatures, then you got very much interested in it, I think. Was that it?
Yeah, because the guys we were working with were biologists, and it was the kind of work, you know, when you're down during the situation, you're kind of thinking, this is what I want to do.
Right, it just clicked. Something clicked for you at that time.
And it clicked that as a kind of, I can combine my hobby with work. A career, and the only problem was I didn't have, you know, a degree to become a biologist, so I started to work on that, and then I got in touch with the NUI Minute, and they had an access program which enabled me to for a course for a year to go back, and this from passing some exams, so I was able to get into college then.
Right, so there's a lot of people out there, like, you know, it's never too late to change and do what you want to do. And so once you obviously were very interested, was it hard to keep going financially though while you were doing it? Or
because I mean, with the downturn in the economy, it was tough for everyone. But, you know, you have to kind of struggle on, because some people, the opportunity to go to college, you know, when there's no jobs at the moment, it isn't there. So I was very lucky in that sense, you know, and my wife is very supportive as well. So
that's important too. So you actually, I saw a demonstration you did where you were actually able to train crocodiles.
Yeah.
So this was very interesting, I thought. So maybe, you know, because I thought, you know, they must be untrainable, a crocodile. Yeah. Tell us about that and why you want to do that.
Okay, so myself and my wife last summer, we went over to India to the Madras Crocodile Bank, and one of the croc biologists there, Soham Mukherjee, was actually training crocs, and I was absolutely fascinated by this, and I knew, you know, crocs are more intelligent than most people give them credit for, and they're very sensitive animals as well, and believe it or not, they're very shy animals. But to actually train them, you know. And so we went there and we were having a look, and he's training several different species, and the you know, different kind of personalities from them were starting to come out, and he could actually take one croc, give it a command to come out of the water, and the croc would come. He'd say stay, and it would stay. He'd say come again, go back to the water, come out, you know, raise his head, open his mouth, and it does them all on command.
You must have been amazed looking at this.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. And because I have a croc at home, you know, I've been raising a croc since, you know, 2006.
Where do you keep them?
In a big enclosure, not much smaller than this room. You know,
okay,
so it's quite
the
big
studio, the studio isn't a huge room now.
it's a small croc. She's 3.5 feet long, and she's in a 1,000-litre pond, and I'm upgrading that now to a 4,000 to 5,000-litre pond in the summer.
Right.
And but so I wanted to learn this technique so I can interact with Tia, you know. And because even though I've seen it, I said, nah, there's no way, you know. Yeah. And so he taught me the few steps, and I swear to God, like within like 2 weeks, you could have one responding to certain commands.
And did you notice the difference between the crocodiles, personality-wise, and between different ones when you're out in India?
Yeah, no, the American alligator seemed to be responding better than the others. But you can see within the different species, Siamese crocodiles, and in Nile crocodiles and a saltwater crocodile, and some of them were, it's like some of them were kind of when they're moving up and they're told to stay, it's like they stay close to ground and they do a little hoosh forward, it's like, as if, you know, he won't see, and he's, you know, they're trying to sneak up to get the food, you know. It's really exciting. It's almost human the way they react.
So with your crocodile at home, what's the name again?
Tia. Yeah, she's a spectacle caiman from South America.
Okay, so can you bring her out into the garden and stuff like that?
Well, I don't really. I tried not to disturb her too much, but the enclosure that she's in now is, you know, plenty of room for Tia, but there's not much room in there for me to interact with. That's hence why I want to build a bigger one for me to walk around in as well.
Right.
But within, as you've seen the demonstrations at the Whitaker Awards, she's within a month of not really being able to interact with her, to having her come out and stop when I tell her to stop and come and take her food and stuff. So it's an activity that she's shown that she wanted to participate in.
What about the aggression instinct, you know, because obviously people, even if you said, right, I have my croc trained, they're still going to be standing at the other side of the room, I think, if you had her out.
Yeah, it's... believe it or not, like Crocs are more scared, you know, like when you see like films or, you know, documentaries and you see the boat going down the river and the Crocs are on the bank and they all come into the water, like your immediate instinct when you look at that is they're coming up to the boat, they're going to get you. But it's not. It's because they feel threatened and they want to go into their safe zone.
Okay.
So water is their safe zone. You just happen to be in the water. That's why it looks like they're coming for you.
So you're starting to see things from the crocodile's point of view.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's important that people see that because, you know, overhyped fear in these species, like it doesn't really do good for their conservation. It's a hard job trying to tell people that crocs are worth saving, you know.
Sure. Now, crocs, alligators, and there was another group you mentioned to me earlier.
The gharials, yeah.
Yeah. Now, how are they doing worldwide?
The gharials are in serious trouble.
How do you spell that, Gary?
It's gharial.
Okay, and that's a guy with a long kind of snout.
Yeah.
So and he goes after fish.
Yeah, because it's very much like birds, the way they've evolved kind of hollow bones for an adaptation to flight. Well, the gharial has an adaptation for catching fish, and that's they've reduced weight in their skull.
Okay.
They have this real long, slender snout with a lot of teeth. Now, that's designed for catching fish, side-swooping in the water. Frogs, maybe, very small mammals. But they're not designed, they don't have that big, heavy skull that other crocs do for catching big mammals.
Yeah.
And they're not really, in that sense, a threat to people. They don't hunt big animals. But they do hunt fish.
Okay.
And that's a big problem to people.
So if there's a problem with the fish, as in India, I think there's a problem in certain areas, then there's going to be a problem for them.
Yeah, well, the population has been struggling. In 1974, there was a survey done and literally showed that there was about 50 to 60 gharials, and there was a huge conservation campaign at the time for the last 30 years, which they bred 5,000 gharials, and once they raised them past the delegate stage to about a year, they released them. But there still was only, you know, a few hundred still, you know, due to the problems with the, you know, the people there.
And can I ask you, sorry, it's fascinating, we're just running a bit short on time. So after you qualify, you're in your second year now, everything going great. What would be your ambition after you graduate then? I mean, do you want a career looking after something to do with crocodiles and alligators? Is that where your ambition is?
Yeah, I think so, because I'm only halfway through the degree now. And every time we take on a new module, you know, I get to see something new that I wasn't aware of before. But I still always go back to the reptiles. And conservation of crocodilians is a big thing for me, you know, especially with the gharials, because of the problems with the fish, you know, from one of the rivers that was heavily polluted going in. It caused a lot of problems for the gharials in the winter of 2007, 2008, where half of the breeding population turned up dead. And that was from their kidneys failing, and they weren't able to, you know, metabolize the uric acid and stuff coming
sure.
through.
Sure, but maybe we'll have you'll become a media person, and you'll show everybody on television what it's like to hold the crocodiles.
Absolutely, I mean, if anyone wants to see crocs, you come down to Reptile Village in Kilkenny.
Are you involved with them? Where is that exactly?
It's
in the town?
Gorin.
Gorin, okay.
And it's a great place to bring the family.
Reptile Village in Kilkenny.
Place, yeah.
Okay, well, we've just run out of time, John, but thanks a million for coming into studio today. That's John Dunbar. He's an undergraduate at NUI Maynooth, and as you heard there, he's very much interested in crocodiles and all other creatures related to crocs, alligators, and some other ones too. So thanks, John. Now,